Welcome back here to X's and Bros, hour number two on this Thursday, 7:01 on the clock. Danica Halen playing all your favorite hits. Ryan Elke doing all the video and graphics stuff. Check out our Twitter at XB Mornings. See the chalkboard. I'm Anthony Bellino holding a microphone and playing air guitar. Did you know that every time, because Dan just called me out on it because he obviously can see me before everybody else can from the television side. But when this song comes on, every time I play air guitar, all I can think about is Ice Cube. In the film Boys in the Hood, when he gets out of the car, he kind of plays air guitar a little. You know, you can picture the GIF, you can picture the scene in the film. That's everything I always think of. Auto Valley guest line 313-396-5527, 313-396-5527. Text the keyword Sports Radio to 21000, Sports Radio to 21000. Ice Cube asking, we have a problem here. A little air guitar. Freddie is on hold on the Auto Valley guest line. Let's get right to it. Freddie, good morning to you. Happy Thursday, my friend. How are you?
Good morning, AB. How are you, sir?
I'm good. I got a question based on something I saw on the interwebs last night. Are you going to be adding to or building in addition to the train setup in the house?
Dude, that was amazing. My son, we have to block him off YouTube because he'll go on YouTube and he's, obviously, you know, kids with autism, they're fascinated with trains. And I came in the room and I watched him. He was watching that. And I couldn't even put the whole video on Twitter. It was amazing. It went through the house, through the garage, through the backyard. I looked at my wife and go, man, that's got to be like $15,000-$20,000, man. That's crazy. So, no. Well,
if the little man sees it, good luck. Good luck if he sees that one.
I hear you. Hey, listen, if you're playing the air guitar, please don't drop any boxes on your shoulder. So we don't want you to blow
on
your shoulder.
Ooh, come on now.
You know, speaking of Joe Zamaya, he used to be a good follow on Facebook. Man, he turned into a lunatic. I had to unfollow that guy. Man, what a lunatic he turned out to be.
Really?
But Joe Zamaya.
Yeah. I'm surprised at that. I don't really actually follow a whole lot of athletes on anything. There's a couple of people that I do. But yeah, I enjoy Blake Griffin. He's pretty funny. He doesn't seem to take life too serious. I think he's a really good follow on Twitter because he's got a really good sense of humor. You know, but for some of these other guys that have just gone off the deep end, I can't remember who's that one pitcher now that is just a psychopath.
Kurt Schilling.
No, not Kurt Schilling. But Kurt Schilling's another good one.
Does Brooke Fletcher follow
Aubrey Huff.
Aubrey Huff, that's who it is. Yep.
Listen, this is not directed at you. Okay, so I swear, and I don't even want to say the rest, but I wasn't even going to call today. That interview pissed me off so bad, and I'll tell you why.
Oh, boy.
Okay? Again, this is not directed at you. And I tell you, thank God I'm not in the media. I would never want to be in the media because I just think sometimes, and this is not a shot at any of you guys, but I just think sometimes, you can't say what you want to say. And I'm directing at the guy that you talk to, okay? Now, as a Detroit Lions fan, okay, how many times I got to hear, well, just don't, you know, wait till you, what's the term he used? Wait till you wish for, refresh my memory.
Careful what you wish for, basically.
Yeah,
be
careful what you wish for. Because if he leaves, then what? Okay, now, I'm a Detroit Lions fan. You work in the media. By the way, you work in Atlanta where your coach took you to the Super Bowl, your quarterback took you to the Super Bowl, you're up 24-3, and all you guys got blown out last week, and your owner said Matt Ryan is not even safe. And these guys all went to a Super Bowl and almost won that Super Bowl. They blew the Super Bowl, okay? But they had almost won. Any Lions fan would take that today, any day of the week.
Yes, now, 100%, without question, without doubt. Every Lion, to have the run that the Atlanta Falcons have had over the last 5 to 8 years, the Detroit Lions fan base would, they would be willing to do some heinous acts for an opportunity like that.
Now I got to hear somebody, and he's not the only one that said it. You keep hearing it over and over. Be careful what you wish for. Listen, I'm got to the point where, you know what, I'm wishing for him to leave because We haven't won a division. We haven't won a big game. We haven't won a playoff game. So what do I got? What do I got to be careful for? I mean, I'm speaking as a Lions fan. Okay, what do I have to be careful for, AB? Tell me.
Well, I think that one thing, and I understand your frustration. I do.
And I'm not frustrated with you.
You could be because I have to get frustrated with myself sometimes. So it's okay if you get frustrated with me because. There are certain topics that I gotta kind of dance around, and that's okay. I try to be as open about that as possible, just because it's a tight line, much like Shep with the Tigers. Obviously not on the same level, but you understand what I'm saying there as far
of
as
course,
employment. But I think that when you look at the history of the quarterback position with the Detroit Lions franchise, it is difficult for me to not separate Matthew Stafford from what we've had in the past. And when you look at, okay, here's a guy that at least has the talent in order to make you a winner. We've seen this team be a winner before. We've seen them get a playoff berth before. Have they choked in some of the biggest games? Without a doubt. Do you wish that you could have those games back and everybody could be better? Yes, but that's the beauty of NFL football, is it's just one and done. There is no tomorrow. It's only a 16-week season. There's only one game a week. Like, urgency. You know, the fact that everybody's got like a blowtorch chasing them around, at least that's how they should feel, because there isn't a guarantee. Like, that part, when I factor all of that in and I can separate Matthew Stafford from what the franchise has failed to do collectively, I feel okay about that, because I feel like, okay, well, think about what Matt Ryan and the Atlanta Falcons had during the Super Bowl, the number one scoring offense. If the Detroit Lions were putting up points the way that they were last year when they started off so hot on the offensive side of the football, I don't know where that went and how that has changed. All of a sudden Stafford got injured, you know, the lack of, I'm not going to make any excuses. They have not been good enough. And right now Lions fans got to really be asking, do they even want them to win on Sunday? That's why I brought up that question after the Arizona game. Was that a good win for the franchise long-term? You know, because it's like, you look at this next handful of games, this could be some fool's gold, Freddie. I'm not going to buy in on it.
If you look on Twitter, many have bought into it. I mean, even your own coach is peacocking. I mean, he's like, well, you know, this, you know, blah, 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 blah. I mean, you know, when are we going to stop focusing on when Stafford is not playing, what this team is doing, versus focusing when he is playing, what this team is doing?
Okay? And Freddie, he hasn't been good this year. He has not been nearly.
Years.
Oh no, you can't. What happened? What about last year? He was fantastic before he got injured.
He was great before he got injured. Okay, I understand. So now, if Stafford would have played the whole year last year, you're telling me they would have won 10 games? You're telling me that roster would have won 10 games?
No. I was just telling you that Matthew Stafford played great. You bring up the entire roster. I don't trust the coaching staff.
It doesn't matter that Matthew Stafford is great, or he's the greatest thing this organization has ever seen at quarterback. It's what he's doing to win big games, playoff wins, and division title. He hasn't done any of that.
But you can't win that alone.
Okay, and I go back to Scott Mitchell, okay, and I'm not yelling at you. I go back to Scott Mitchell. A lot of people dog Scott Mitchell. Scott Mitchell was winning 12 games a year. He was winning divisions. He was taken to the playoffs. You telling me only because Barry Sanders was on that team they won? No, I watched those games. Scott Mitchell was a good quarterback. Perriman had 108 catches. Herman Moore had 114 catches. The other guy had over 100. Oh, we had three guys over 100 catches in a year. That didn't come from Barry Sanders. They come from Scott Mitchell. The rhetoric from these national writers, I'm getting crazy. It's driving me nuts. I know you got to go, but it's driving me nuts.
I love you, Freddie. I don't ever want you to change. Okay, I love you. I
right back at you, Abe.
I do.
I wish we had more time. I get so frustrated. I can't even talk.
That's okay. I understand. That's Freddie the Pizza Man. We'll step aside. We'll be back with more X's and Bros after this here on the Michigan Sports Network.
We have batteries, brakes, mufflers, and more at your auto value. Hard store, where service is the difference. We get it.
This month, True Fuel Premixed Oil is just $5.99. Perfect Stop DOT-4 Brake Fluid for just $3.49. And if it's time for new shocks and struts, then it's time for Monroe. Shop online at MyAutoValueStore.com and get 15% off orders of $75 or more with coupon code FALL15. That's Auto Value, where service is the difference. We get it.
Halloween at Meijer means ghoulishly good savings for you. This week, buy five and save $5 instantly when you mix or match Halloween favorites like Hershey's snack-sized bagged candy, just $2.79 each. 24 packs of Pepsi and Coca-Cola, just $6.99 each, plus deposit where applicable. Plus, enjoy free Meijer pickup on orders of $50 or more. Visit Meijer.com to get started. Find spooky savings and more when you buy five and save five at Meijer. Exclusions apply. See all the deals in the Meijer app.
Huge here for my good friends at DraftKings. Now, week six is happening this weekend, and there's no better place to get in on all the action than with DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy sports. And to add to the week six excitement, DraftKings has a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes up for grabs. So download that DraftKings app. Remember that promo code HUGE. And for a limited time, new users can get a free shot at millions of dollars in prizes this week. Don't miss out on the week six action. Enter code HUGE to get a free shot at millions of dollars in prizes with your first deposit. That's code HUGE, only at DraftKings. Make it rain. Now there's a minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. And remember to download the DraftKings app and use promo code HUGE for your free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes.
Welcome back here to X's and Bros on this Thursday morning, 22nd day of October 2020. Pleasure to have you all riding along with us from Traverse City down to Toledo. We appreciate you no matter who you are, where you are, or how you may be listening. Danny Cahala, Ryan Elke in the studio. I'm Anthony Bellino. Find us on Twitter at XB Mornings. Call us at 313-396-5527, 313-396-5527, or text the keyword Sports Radio to 21000 Sports Radio to 21000. We had to go back to something that Freddie had said. Memory was a little shaky on my part. So Ryan and I have gone down and dug in the crates a little bit. And Scott Mitchell, here's his career as the leading passer of the Detroit Lions from 1995, 96, and 97. That's before Charlie Batch came in. Then there was a little Gus Farah, then a little more Charlie Batch. There was Joey Harrington, John Kitna, Dan Orlovsky, whatever. But he was 10-6,
Mike McMahon.
10-6 with a lost wild card playoff game in 95. In 96, he was 5-11, and in 97 with a lost wild card round game in the playoffs, he was 9-7. 10-6, 5-11, 9-7. Never won more than 10 games. So it is 12 wins every year. I get it. Sometimes when you're thinking about somebody and you remember like a good time, you start to associate things and you go back and you look and you're like, oh, wow, I didn't really realize that it was that bad. He was no world beater. That's for sure. But when you look at the Detroit Lions, a team that since, like, think about this. From the year of 1990, right? We're going to go back 30 years. You know how many double-digit winning seasons they've had? Three? Okay, Ryan, if you had to guess, and you're not looking at the sheet right now, how many double-digit winning seasons have the Lions had since 1990?
Four.
We have three and four. The correct number is actually five. There are five winning seasons in the last 30 years. And by winning seasons, I mean double-digit winning seasons in the last 30 years. That could be 10 games or more. They won 12 games in 91, 10 in 93, 10 in 95. They won 10 under Jim Schwartz in 2011, and then 11 under Jim Caldwell in 2014.
Yeah, I forgot about the Schwartz year.
I mean, that is an astounding number, and that it's much more than just Matthew Stafford. It truly is. It truly is. I know that some people, you know, they don't like that, and that's okay, but it's a lot more. I mean, you don't do that. That's basically 30 years of losing, right? And you're going to have some records that are, you know, 8-8 in 99 or 9-7 in 2000. You know, those, you could look back at those years, the 9-7 in 2016 and 2017, back-to-back seasons there. You know, that's not good enough. 9-7 in 94, 9-7 in 92. But outside of that, there aren't a whole lot of winning seasons for the Detroit Lions. And since 1990, with only 5 double-digit winning seasons, they've gone to the playoffs, what, 9 times in 30 years? That's not great. But that's the reality of the situation. And as far as Scott Mitchell is considered, like, you know, good quarterback, sure. But, I mean, Matthew Stafford's the best quarterback in franchise history, don't you think? I mean, statistically speaking, it's not even close. And I know it wasn't all Barry. Barry didn't do all of that. But at the same time, when you have Barry Sanders in the backfield, your team is always a threat to run the ball. That makes throwing the ball easier. You know, there have been years where the run game has been non-existent. That's why DeAndre Swift getting as many touches as he got, you know, being able to cross the 100-yard plateau, you know, that was big for him. But I don't know what this organization does moving forward going into the Atlanta game. I don't know where you were at as a fan base wanting this team, you know, in whatever they may do on Sunday against Atlanta. I don't know if that's necessarily a good thing. I thought for sure Freddie was going to call about Tua. Just because, you know, Ryan Fitzpatrick saying that he was heartbroken, Tua Tagovailoa is a guy that, you know, many Lions fans kind of wanted in some strange way, like that quarterback was going to be able to fix the fact that the defense can't stop anybody. Maybe he was going to go play linebacker too, like in high school where your quarterback plays linebacker, one of those type of deals. But we're going to find out what he is. Hopefully he doesn't get Josh Rosen, man. And that's the question. Like, Miami's got half a season now to figure it out. They'll welcome him in with the LA Rams. They're off this week, so he'll get 2 weeks to prepare for Aaron Donald, Jalen Ramsey and company. Like, congratulations. That's a great prize for trying to, you know, be a starting quarterback in the National Football League, and I wish you all the best, Tua. But we'll see. Look how it turned out for Josh Rosen. You know, not good. Not good at all. Would you be surprised if Miami went back to the well at quarterback again next year if Tua struggles this year? Because the team is showing a little bit of life. At 3-3, they got to be thinking, well, a team's good enough around us right now to win football games. Let's see how many he can win, and then we'll go from there. Stan Van Gundy, by the way, he agreed to a deal to become the coach of the New Orleans Pelicans. A couple of NBA notes for you before we move into Saturday's preview of Michigan State and Rutgers. Van Gundy formerly coached the Miami Heat, the Orlando Magic, and of course our Detroit Pistons. You know, is this a good fit for Van Gundy? I don't know. I'm really not sure. He's 61 years old. He has a 58% career winning percentage, and he's about 53% in the playoffs, led the Magic to the 09 NBA Finals. Pelican squad underachieving a little bit. Here's my question, though. With Zion Williamson, Brandon Ingram, Jackson Hayes, Nikhil Alexander-Walker, Lonzo Ball, Josh Hart, like, are those players ready for a coach like Stan Van Gundy? I saw this and I'm like, I don't know how this works. I mean, at least they have some veteran leadership in Jrue Holiday and J.J. Redick. And Redick might be able to bridge that gap. He might be the most important player on that roster this year. But I don't know if that really works out well for New Orleans. Because these young kids today, they don't take a whole lot of criticism very well, and Stan Van Gundy's a little bit of a yeller, as we saw, and it sometimes, you know, that message can get lost the more that you go that route with it.
That, and like, what is Stan Van going to provide that Alvin Gentry couldn't?
I'm not sure. Change of voice, maybe. I mean, I don't really know. I saw this and I'm like,
it seems like a young team that was put together really just last year. So it's like, do you really need a change of voice? And like, how different is that voice changing when it just seems like, okay, We replaced our older coach for this younger team with the old coach.
That in the fact that you can't really blame Alvin Gentry on wins and losses after losing your franchise piece. You know what I mean? Like, he's trying to get the max that he can out of a bunch of younger guys that, you know, let's be honest, Brandon Ingram, winning most improved. I think, Ryan, I think you might have said it, like, congratulations on winning the award for living up to expectation.
Yeah.
And I thought that was, like, most improved should have gone to a guy like Christian Wood, a guy nobody had on the radar. Like, we expected Brandon Ingram to get 20 a game.
Yeah. Congrats for actually developing.
Yeah. So, I don't know about Stan Van. Yeah, I hope it works out for him, but I just don't know if I see that happening. And how about the Indiana Pacers? Hired a guy by the name of Kevin Bjorkgren, who worked with the Toronto Raptors and Nick Nurse. He's 45 years old. He was an assistant coach, and he's already got his plan in place for the Pacers. Will Victor Oladipo still be there? I don't know. It sounds like he wants to get out. I think that Indiana is one of those franchises that if they could rebuild what they had in the late 90s, they'd be in really good shape. He's got to find a way to do that in today's player-driven, player movement sort of franchise. And then also, could you see the Toronto Raptors this year playing at the KFC Yum Center in Louisville? This is a situation where MLB, you remember the Toronto Blue Jays, they played in Buffalo, if I'm not mistaken. The MLS team has from Canada has moved to the United States as well because of international travel. Could this be a testing ground for potential future expansion? You know, Louisville, Kentucky is a place that is a basketball nut house, so we'll see if it works, and we'll see if that's what Toronto decides to do. But I think it's a pretty good plan, much like the NBA experimenting with what they did with OKC, although I don't even think expansion is on the top priorities for the association. We'll step aside. When we return, we'll talk to James Cratch of NJ.com to get a preview of Rutgers in this Saturday's game against the Spartans next here on X's and Bros on the Michigan Sports Network.
Huge here for the incredible Tullymore Golf Resort. They're in Canadian Lakes, Michigan, less than an hour north of GR and a short drive for most of you listening right now on the Huge Show across Michigan. Fabulous place to get away, and there still will be some good days of golf left. Book a tee time right now at TullymoreGolf.com, a stay and play package in the fall if you just want to get away. The restaurants are open, and if you want to look at some real estate, maybe looking ahead to 2021, a weekend home, or if you want to live on the grounds at Tullymore, go to TullymoreGolf.com. That is TullymoreGolf.com. And if you want to look ahead for a wedding, a reception, an outing, a corporate event, or anything in 2021, now is the time to book it while dates are there. Go to TullymoreGolf.com. That's TullymoreGolf.com. The Tullymore Golf Resort in Canadian Lakes, Michigan.
As a healthcare professional, you care for your patients. But who will care for your practice? Who will keep it healthy? And who do you refer to if it takes a turn for the worse? Just as you may consult with another healthcare specialist, so too should you seek out tax and accounting specialists to consult with regarding specific issues your practice may face. That's where we come in. We're Bean Garter. And while your business is keeping people physically healthy, our business is helping you keep your practice financially healthy. We'll provide you with the innovative business solutions your practice needs without compromising your patient focus. Whether you're a doctor or dentist, a sole practitioner, or a multi-physician practice, before you see patients, come see us first. Experience service, expertise, and simplicity at Bean Garter. Find us online, beangarter.com. Bean Garter.
Tree of life, I just picked me a plum. You came along and everything started into hum. Still, it's a real good bet. The best is
welcome back here to X's and Bros on the Michigan Sports Network. Danica Halen and Ryan Elke in our Motor City studio. I'm Anthony Bellino coming to you from the radio bunker and joining us on the horn right now. He has the beat on the Rutgers Scarlet Knights for NewJersey.com. It's our friend James Cratch. You can find him on Twitter at James Cratch. James, first and foremost, thank you for taking the time today. How are you? Everybody good and healthy on your end?
Hey, Anthony. Everything is going well here. Obviously, you know, everything's kind of rising all across the country, but knock on wood, we're all healthy here.
That is that's a huge positive. And we finally have Big Ten football for the first time in a very long time. This conference has been waiting and waiting and waiting just to get onto the field. They finally do. And I was on NJ.com checking out one of your articles about the daily rapid COVID-19 antigen testing. I don't even know. Is it antigen, antigen, whatever it is?
Antigen.
Yeah, antigen testing. How it works and who gets tested and what positive tests mean. And as you were digging into this story, what can you tell us, I guess, maybe the SparkNotes version of how the Big Ten is going to handle testing all across the board? It's all the athletes, all the personnel, all the staff. It seems like an overwhelming task.
Yeah, so as of now, it's just the football program, which is, basically for most, I think the Big Ten, I believe, and look, the Big Ten has not been terribly transparent about any of this, I think. And it's kind of funny, after all the calls for transparency, from Ohio State, from Nebraska, from Michigan, when the decision to initially not play football, suddenly, we've gone the other way and now we're playing football, but they're still not really explaining what's going on. So the way I believe it's constituted now is every school's getting 170, rapid antigen tests each day, which is used for, it's a cap for the players, the coaches, the managers, support staff, anyone who's around the team. Now, the difference between antigen testing, which is what the Big Ten's using, and PCR tests, which is, like the swab, the test, being commonly used across the country, is antigen tests are a lot quicker. You can usually get results in like 15 minutes, so you can test an entire football team, right before practice and have everything done in an hour. And they're a lot cheaper, which means that you can test every day as opposed to a PCR test where much more expensive. So now maybe you're talking about, I think the SEC does it 3 days a week. The downside is antigen tests are not as accurate as those PCR tests. So while you don't really have to worry about a false positive because any positive antigen test is going to be confirmed with the backup PCR test, you do have to worry about a false negative. And, when the stakes are high, if a guy has the coronavirus and he's shedding it and he tests negative on a Monday and then goes to practice, even if it gets caught on Tuesday, in theory, he may have been able to spread the virus onto his coaches and teammates, and that's how you kind of get in trouble. So the Big Ten is hopeful that doing it every day will allow them to isolate positive cases, because those are going to be inevitable at all schools in all likelihood. Isolate those cases, prevent big outbreaks like we've seen at schools around the country. But again, when you're playing 14 teams playing 9 games over 9 weeks, 11 different states involved, I think half the country basically when you count the miles up, and there's not a lot of margin for error to kind of get the schedule on without a hitch. So they're going to have to get kind of lucky, I think, to have this all fall into place. But they believe they can control those outbreaks. So we'll see if it happens.
James, you mentioned something early on there that I wanted to touch on, and that was the key word of transparency. What is your thought about how teams and programs are supposed to handle a positive COVID test? Should they be naming the players? Does it matter if they name the players? I guess we all kind of figure out if a team is, who they have dressed and who they don't, and who's on site on game day and who isn't. So we can kind of use the process of elimination. But wouldn't it just be easier for a coach to come out and say, hey, our tests on Thursday, we had player X, Y, and Z. They tested positive, so they're going to, self-isolate, quarantine, because it's 21 days, according to the Big Ten rule. That's 3 weeks.
Yes.
That's 30% of the season, basically.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, me personally, I understand that there's privacy issues in play, but at the same time, too, this is a very public thing. It's a billion-dollar industry, college football. If I was in charge, I would say I think the first thing is the testing data. We've seen that the Big Ten has the green, orange, red, kind of the color-coded system based on the positivity rates. That should be public. I think it is a little concerning that in theory you could have a football team that's operating in that like orange zone where they've got a pretty significant amount of, members of their program testing positive, but no one would know necessarily. I think that's kind of questionable, especially when you have, campus communities that do have other students on there who are not getting daily testing. But I think just a simple availability report would suffice. And you don't have to say that, this kid is out. You don't have to say he's going to be how many weeks they're going to be out. I mean, if a kid tears his ACL, usually a school will say, okay, he's out for the season. But if a guy is going to be out for a couple weeks with a bad hamstring, they usually never give you a time frame. So I think an availability report where it would include kids who have tested positive, but also kids who have been suspended or might be benched for a game or have a normal, run of the mill injury, like a sprained ankle, kind of put those guys out there. Just go week by week with it. So if a guy tests positive for coronavirus, you don't have to say he's out for 3 weeks. And so people can kind of maybe ascertain, okay, he tested positive, but you can say each game day, hey, he's not going to play today.
Yeah, hopefully they find some sort of happy medium. And, when talking with Chris Solari of the Detroit Free Press yesterday, the one thing he said, he was a little bit discouraged about the availability of players or the positive tests as like a competitive advantage. And that really stood out to me because, how teams will try to guard their information based on competition. It's like, come on now, guys.
Yeah, I understand that football coaches want to do that. But at some point, too, public health crisis that has killed over 200,000 Americans. I think at some point, look, it's not happening many places, but I do feel that competitive advantage is one thing, but at the same time, I do think you have to be somewhat upfront about what's going on. And not just I think the fact that if there's not a lot of transparency, I think transparency encourages confidence in the system that the Big Ten does have a clear plan. And they are operating in good faith and with the safety of coaches and athletes in mind. I think the less transparency you have, the more people start to wonder, is this just a cash grab after looking at the numbers and seeing other schools around the country playing?
He's James Cratch. He covers Rutgers, the Scarlet Knights football program, for NJ.com, New Jersey's website for the state, state university there of New Jersey. This is Greg Schiano, round number two here with the Scarlet Knights. What's the buzz like around Rutgers? Because this was a program that had spent many years as an independent, and then moved into the Big East in the early 90s, and then into the 2000s when Greg Schiano took over. They were still a part of the Big East. They moved to the American for a year, and then welcome to the Big Ten, and it hasn't necessarily been so welcoming for the Rutgers football program. But what's the level of interest and excitement out there on your side of the country for this football program?
Oh, it's as high as it has been in years. I mean, look, Greg Schiano he's the guy who kind of gave Rutgers football its dignity in the modern era. A lot of people say he's the reason why they are in the Big Ten, because the success he had early on at this school allowed them to expand the stadium, which people always say if they hadn't expanded the stadium, the Big Ten never would have come calling. He's the guy who had the vision, that Rutgers, the sleeping, I always joke, they played in the first college football game, and the sleeping giant's been asleep for 151 years now. So, there's a lot of optimism that, in this part of the country with the tremendous high school football talent the state produces, everyone has always believed they can just keep those kids home. Rutgers could really be a contender, obviously, on the national level and obviously in the Big Ten. So, Greg was the guy they had to hire. He's the one guy who could kind of unite the fan base, excite people again. Obviously, I think this has been a really weird twist this year that no one really kind of expected. But there's a lot of excitement for this team, I think. And it's also kind of the fact that no one really knows what to expect or what this program is going to look like when they get out on the field on Saturday.
James, I've been saying it since like 2014 when they joined the Big Ten, that the Big Ten should have mandated that Greg Schiano be the head coach there to make Rutgers, what they were when they, under Greg Schiano, and he was there from 01 to 2011 before he had left, and they were ranked in the AP top 25, three separate times, and they had respectable seasons like 8-5s and 9-4, and then you look back at the 06 year where they were 11-2. Like, there was some respect for that program, and hopefully he's able to turn some things around here for Rutgers now moving forward. What can you tell us about Rutgers and what to expect? Because this is, since, as I mentioned, Rutgers coming into the Big Ten, it necessarily hasn't been the most pleasant experience there in terms of football. And Michigan State has kind of had their way by a combined score of 206-44 and an average margin of victory of 27 points per game. The Spartans have dominated Rutgers in this matchup. So what can we expect from Rutgers this year?
That's a great question. This is a really different roster. I think ESPN.com kind of made it crack that it was almost like Rutgers had an expansion draft. Obviously, Greg brought in a lot of transfers from other Power 5 schools. Michael Plumfour from Michigan is one. He's kind of turned this roster over. The expectation is, he hasn't come out and announced it yet, but a lot of people think that Noah Vedral, the backup quarterback from Nebraska who transferred in, is probably going to be the starter, fit that offensive scheme. I think on offense, you're going to see a better offense. There's really nowhere to go but up for the Rutgers offense. They were abysmal last season, but you know, Sean Gleason, the new offensive coordinator, he's going to try to run that kind of, you know, up-tempo, hurry up, snap the ball every 15 seconds offense. Bedrill's a guy who I think can throw a little bit. He can make some things happen with his legs. You've got a really good back in Isaiah Pacheco. You've got some an offensive line that I think is going to struggle, but maybe the hope is you can kind of negate that by moving fast and running the ball a lot with Pacheco and Aaron Young. You've got some tight ends and wide receivers, not a lot of proven there, you know, some upside potentially. I think defense is where this team is really going to probably be stronger at first. You know, you brought in a bunch of defensive linemen. That was a position group that they clearly had to overhaul. They've got a really good set of linebackers. I think, you know, they might have one of the better linebacking corps in the Big Ten quietly. I know they're really confident about that group. And then you go to the secondary. They've got some players. You know, Avery Young, I think, is good, a really good cornerback, has the potential to be a kind of a really good player in the Big Ten. Brendan White came in from Ohio State. Obviously, he was a Rose Bowl MVP when he was there with Chiano. He just really didn't have a place in their defense last year with Jeff Hafley. They're going to do some, you know, unique, dynamic things with him, but there's just not much depth behind their starters in the secondary. I think if they have an injury or two there, they're going to be playing some true freshmen. And obviously, special teams are really strong with Adam Korsak, I think, the best punter in the country. You know, they've had some good coverage teams the last few years. So I think this is going to be a defense-first team, and what it's really going to come down to is, you know, how much better can that defense be at stopping the run, tackling, and rushing the passer. And then for the offense, can they just be competent? If they're a unit that can go out there and score 17 to 24 points a week, I think Rutgers has a chance to be in a lot of these games and potentially steal one or two by the end.
And one of the guys on the perimeter, Bo Melton's actually a kid I'm very excited to be able to watch on Saturday just to see how he is used and what he can kind of feature. The leading receiver coming back from last year's team, a smaller guy at 5'11", 190, but he's a playmaker. He could be a threat.
No, definitely. He's a guy who's kind of, you know, he played as a true freshman and kind of really struggled and kind of slowly come along the last 2 years. I think big key for him is going to be what can he do, you know, in theory, whether it's Bedrill or an improved Art Sikowski, what can he do in an offense that actually has the ability to kind of throw the ball down the field? We really haven't seen him in an offense that could easily, you know, throw the ball. The hope is that that's finally going to happen this year.
He's James Cratch. He covers Rutgers for NJ.com. And if you had to put your finger on it, James, as you look at the way that the schedule's going to break out, and only 9 games for the Big Ten teams, important to remember, but road games against Michigan State, road game against Ohio State. At least you get Penn State and Michigan at home later on down the line, but no, not really any easy sledding when you look at the way that the conference, the schedule is shaking out. You have Indiana, Illinois, Purdue all in there. Is it a rivalry game on the road at Maryland? Very well could be. But when you saw the schedule come out, what was your first thought?
You know, my first thought was I actually thought that the Big Ten did Rutgers a favor, you know, because usually it's always been for them that they've, at the end of the year, they get to November and it's, you know, they usually play Ohio State early on, but it's been Michigan and Michigan State and Penn State all loaded into November. I think in 2018, they went Wisconsin, Michigan, Penn State, Michigan State, you know, just brutal stuff like that. They've always, and then when the Big Ten schedule 2.0 came out, it was front loaded with all those teams early on in the year. They were playing in, you know, September, and October was hellacious. But I actually thought the third and final Big Ten schedule, you know, I don't have it right in front of me, but I thought it kind of laid out nicely for them in that they get a week buffer in between all their matchups against the big schools, you know, the home and a road kind of split up. I look at the schedule, I think they're not, obviously, I think Michigan State's a chance to potentially steal a game, just element of surprise they're going to have on Saturday, you know, two teams that we really don't know what to expect from either club, but obviously Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, you're not going to win those games. I don't think they're going to beat Indiana. I think Indiana is clearly ahead of them, but Illinois, Purdue, Maryland, you got a puncher's chance. I think Purdue, I'm kind of on the fence about Purdue. I think them getting Rondell Moore back makes that a much tougher game. But I think this is a team that the schedule kind of lays out nicely for them that they can pick their spots they've got a chance to maybe win a game or two that people don't see coming.
I like that. Very East Coaster right there. Puncher's chance. No, that's good. Yeah. And you're right. There is a buffer week in between all the big name schools. Indiana separates Michigan State and Ohio State. Illinois separates the Buckeyes and the Wolverines. Purdue separating the Wolverines and the Nittany Lions. So there is, as you mentioned, maybe a little bit of a favor. How, from what you've heard from coaches and players there in Rutgers, how exactly are they planning on attacking Mel Tucker and Michigan State? Because, I mean, we here, even in our own state, don't really know exactly what to expect from this Michigan State team. I think we're all very excited to see them take the field and see what kind of offense and what kind of team identity this Spartan team wants to have. But what have you heard from the guys out there as far as how to prepare for a guy with, I mean, Mel Tucker coming over from Colorado? He was 5-7 there. It might make you scratch your head a little bit on how he got the state job, but that's neither here nor there. I guess you go back to some Colorado tape and kind of look at that, but what's the strategy here from the coaching staff standpoint?
Yes, that's a great question. They have not said much. I mean, they would not even confirm today that they've looked at the Colorado tape. So, it's been very cloak and dagger, I think, on both sides. I mean, for me, I go back to this. I was there in 2018 when Rocky Lombardi started the final game in the rain. I'm sure he's grown the last 2 years, but he wasn't a world beater then. I think this is a game that if I'm Rutgers, I'm looking at it and saying, okay, what can we do to kind of grind this game down and find a way where we both score in the high teens, the low 20s, and we make a couple more plays at the end. I think that's what this game is going to – that's what I believe what they are going to want to turn it into. Now, if they give up 27, 34, 42 points like they have in the past in Michigan State, I don't see Rutgers being terribly competitive on Saturday.
You know, James, you might have me bought in on Rutgers covering this spread. I'm not going to lie. I'm kind of like, wait a minute now. What is Rutgers? What's Shiano got brewing over there? Like, hey, we've got a fighter's chance. Might be able to steal one here. It was a large spread, a couple touchdowns when it opened up last Saturday. Mm-hmm. And, the lines moved a little bit here or there, but it's still a lot of points for Michigan State to try to cover on the road, considering the fact that they have a brand new head coach and a brand new offensive system. But, James, you might have done a good job here and just talked me into Rutgers this weekend.
No, yeah. Look, I'll be honest. I picked them to win, just because just a weird kind of feeling. I think that when I look at the schedule, look, they've lost 21 straight Big Ten games, second longest losing streak in the history of the conference. They have to get. I think it's imperative, just to keep the momentum going with Shiano. You got to win one game, And I look at the schedule and I say, okay, well, if they can't sneak up on Michigan State, a new coach versus new coach game where both teams are clearly kind of rebuilding. Well, then where are they going to do it? And then I get to December 12th at Maryland. Maybe that's the next best chance. And I'll be honest, I don't even know if this season is going to get to December 12th. If we do, I think the Big Ten should consider itself very lucky. And who knows how many of these games are actually going to be played. So, yeah, I think this is a game. Also, Michigan State has come into New Jersey and recruited really well. They pulled three kids out of the state. Two kids that Rutgers really wanted. So I think that could also – be an aspect. Maybe this is kind of a circle the wagons type game for Shiano. Obviously, his first signature win the first time at Rutgers was the upset of Michigan State in 2004. So those kind of good vibes are flowing around. I think Rutgers is going to be very competitive on Saturday. Don't know if they'll win the game. I do think they should be able to kind of cover that spread, be close. But the big question is going to be, no matter what they do, what can they do going forward? Is this a situation where this is a perfect storm and they're going to really struggle? Or is it a sign that, hey, they might be more competitive in the Big Ten than we thought.
He's James Cratch. You can find him on Twitter at James Cratch, covering Rutgers for NJ.com. James, my friend, thank you so much for the time today, my man. We greatly appreciate it.
Anytime. Thank you.